All right, hello and welcome. I'm Heather.
And I'm John.
Yeah, no Laura. So she has too much work happening because it's the holidays and she works in food. So, well, specifically desserts. So yeah, she's very busy, but she assures me she'll be back next week. So unfortunately, we've got this ape we have to converse with. My husband, John. Hello, John.
Hi.
Yep. So yeah, we've had some eventful, I don't know, few days, but today we painted her room and just painting it over white because she wants to do like anime style murals, I guess, type. And I'm going to let her. Yeah, she lives and breathes anime.
She's probably going to do pretty good because she shows some talent.
Extreme talent.
With the art, yep.
Oh, yeah, because... Yeah, she's just painting little portraits. Like, we just get, you know, those, like, 10-packs at Michael's and just, you know, some basic acrylic paint. So I wonder what she could do with oil. She could probably do a lot more with oil. But, yeah, so she's really pumped to paint all this stuff. She's already talking, like, oh, and on this wall, it's going to be JoJo and then Evangelion over here and Genshin right here. And she's going crazy. So, and then the other day I watched a documentary called Hail Satan, which was amazing. And I didn't know much about it. I guess I thought it had been around, like, the old style, where it was basically just, you know, a dude in a cape drinking wine with a lot of topless women around. Like, I thought that was the Satanic Temple or church.
Oh, I was going to say, there's always been a lot of that. Just, well, okay, some of them called themselves Satanists.
I meant in more modern terms of what people consider a Satanist, you know.
Aleister Crowley and stuff like that.
If that's his name, sure. Then that guy. But I watched it, and it was more about the development of when the Church of Satan started, or I'm sorry, the Satanic Temple started to what it's become now. And I did not realize it's a pretty new establishment. I did not realize how recent, you know, its development was.
Yeah, literally since the late 60s in its current form.
No, I don't think the 60s. No. I'm talking, that was like the Church of Satan. That wasn't really anything, but I'm talking about the current Satanic Temple today as we know it. You know, how they're going about, like, for abortion rights in Texas. You know, they're saying if you'd like to participate, you know, show that it's a religious ritual to get an abortion, you know, we'll represent you. Stuff like that. You know, more political. It's more driven towards equal rights. Like, it's a statement. It's not, like I said, just a dude in a cape drinking wine surrounded by beautiful topless women. You know, it has a purpose. It's current incarnation, I guess.
Yeah, once Anton LaVey was out of the picture, the new high priest, I don't recall his name off the top of my head, but it's something ordinary like Philip, has gotten a lot more politically active, as it were, and very, very modern and very much a religion in terms of what we would consider, you know, having, you know, a voice in social issues and things like that.
Yeah, because I think he's atheist, and then a ton of them, you know, I'd say it seemed like most of them were atheist and just kind of fell into this of, well, I like the idea that it's not a religion, but I'm attached to something that has, you know, a statement that kind of represents, more a philosophy that represents their values and also being not religious.
But incorporated as a church, take advantages that the Constitution and our society gives churches.
Sure. But, you know, it was so cool when they were talking about this. I think it was Oklahoma and Oklahoman court putting the Ten Commandments up in front of a courthouse. And so they demanded that a statue of Baphomet be standing right next to it to equally represent another religion that was not just... Yeah, one specific religion that got represented. So, and that's their statement every time they come out, and it seems so radical what they're doing. But in reality, they're just kind of pointing out, like, hey, it's not just one religion here that's represented. You have a multitude of people that live in this country that have many different viewpoints. You know, it's not fair to represent one religion. I don't know. It was a really cool documentary, man. They are nuts, but they seem like really cool people.
Speaking of nuts, read on the BBC feed nice. Today, mm-hmm. when I was sitting at work waiting for other people to do their jobs, that the Saudi camel beauty contest has cracked down on Botox and other and other cosmetic enhancements given to the contestants by their owners.
Okay. In there, what did it get specific as to where this Botox was being injected? Not they, just the toes, right?
They want to make sure that the camel's lips are flabby,
oh my goodness,
flabby and beautiful, and that their eyes are very doe-like.
What is this, an American beauty pageant? Come on.
It's Saudi Arabian camel beauty pageant with 66 million in stakes for the winners. I mean, I've seen people get shanked over $50 or your bar tab paid off at the the skankiest gal contest at the Hard Rocks ROXX Cafe in Lawton, Oklahoma. $66 million?
Can you imagine the dark money moving through those camel beauty pageants? Do you think it's rigged? It's got to be, right? $66 million.
Everything else in that country is white out the camel beauty pageant, but apparently Botox is off limits now.
Is it just like oil kings that enter these camel beauty pageants that are giving their camels Botox to give them full pouty lips?
You know, amongst the Beda people who live in the Middle East and who are your stereotypical, you know, princes of the desert, they live in tents for part of the year, although they get huge stipends of money from the king of Saudi Arabia, who considers himself.
What? Pizza's done. Hold. Okay. Pizza's out of the oven. Sorry. And we're good. Go. We're
talking about the Bedouin, who are princes of the desert. They get even though they get large stipends from the Saudi royal family, they still live in tents for part of the year. And camels are, even though they all have Cadillacs and tow their camel trailers with, you know, SUVs, they're still a lot into camels, somewhat into horses, but camels are a big deal. Camel racing, camel breeding.
Can I ask, do they dress them up in fine, you know,
They put bridles and very fancy saddles
like
and
gold
such
things
on
them. And gems and shit. Oh, that's awesome. I'm tempted, John, to look at this camel beauty pageant.
Some of these camels are dressed in gold. They have gold bangles on their bridles. They're combed. They're beautifully coiffed. They, you know, are truly objects of rare beauty, even for camels. But, you know, the fact that there's $66 million at stake in the camel beauty pageants has led to basically looking, you know, officials are looking into Botox, looking into camel doping. Some of the camels get surgery to make their bone structure look fancier. So all the camels get x-rayed and ultrasounded to make sure that they haven't had artificial enhancements done to them to make them look more beautiful.
John, this is horrifying. What?
This is camels. This is camels in Saudi Arabia. This is a big, big deal.
There is a dark world out there. My God, it involves camels and beauty pageants. I don't know. Now if I watch this beauty pageant, am I promoting the abuse of these poor camels? I think I have a new cause. I'm going to start boycotting. I'm going to stand at the corner of Platt and Galley with a sign that says no more camel beauty pageants. And then I'll probably be shot within 5 minutes.
This would make a lot of Bedouin very unhappy.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sure they're really paying attention to what happens in Colorado Springs on the corner of Platt and Galley.
You'd be surprised.
I probably would be shocked, actually.
That was my goofy quip of the day. Just, you know, you cannot make this shit up.
Nope. Does Platt and Galley meet?
They don't. They're parallel streets. You're thinking Platt and Circle.
Platt and Circle. Sure. We'll say that. I know this town. I've been here 17 years. Can you believe that?
And you don't know that Platt and Galley are parallel streets.
That's correct. Yes.
Well, you would get lost in a wet paper sack. But
I have called you crying, tears, sobbing. John, dear God, where am I? Please help me. I'd have to describe to you where I was. And it just, it's humiliating.
Find a street sign. Read the names on the street signs. Okay, here's what you need to do. Go ahead and take a left at the next big street.
When I tell you I have the worst instincts when it comes to directions, I don't think I'm understating that. Because how many times have we been driving, John, where we're not really sure where we are? And I go, I think we should go right. And you'll be like, I'm going to go left. And I'll, in my mind, I'm like, God, he is such a stupid motherfucker. Like, why is he going this way? It's going to get worse. Every time we end up exactly where we were supposed to be. Every time. Do you fuck with me where you find a trickery street where it seems like, you know, it's like the labyrinth where it seems like I should go one way, but we end up going the other. And you're doing it just to prove to me that you are superior when it comes to directions.
That's not hard because Colorado Springs is basically a labyrinth.
It is. It's bricks get moved all the time. There's, yeah, often large beasts we have to battle.
You still don't know your north, south, east, west directions, even though this town gives you an enormous 14,000-foot-tall mulligan to the west.
Yeah.
The mountains are always west, but...
Well, at the time, I really could not... I always was forgetting, wait, did he say mountains are towards the west or toward or away going away from the west? And, you know, I figured out my own little trick to remember, but...
Which is to call me.
That is not true. I haven't called you in weeks. Crying.
A week.
Listen, I know who I am. But I'll tell you one thing. This town would be the greatest place to live if occasionally David Bowie just popped up and sang a song.
Anywhere would be the best place to live if David Bowie popped up and sang a song.
That's true. You know, Skid Row. All right, I guess that's where we're going.
Even Pueblo.
We'd even go to Pueblo. Skid Row, then Pueblo. No.
Only if it was a nice day.
It's not that bad. But, oh, man. Well, we watched it the other day, but that, the new teaser trailer for Attack on Titan is out for the last half of the final season. I'm really excited. Man, am I pumped. I really want to rewatch it all. How about you?
That's a serious investment of time. I don't know that I'll rewatch it all.
It's not that much. Like, they're pretty short seasons. There's only four.
I'll watch the first half of the last season just to get me back into the groove before we just hit this thing as a marathon. What's the term? Binge? As we binge it heavily. Yes, I hope that they don't just stretch it out like one episode a week. I hope they drop the whole last half of the season down so that we could just nest and watch.
They're absolutely not going to do that. No, I don't know. I don't know. I would assume it's probably only one episode a week.
Ouch.
Yeah, it'll hurt, but...
Give you something to look forward to, I guess.
I mean, we've been this desperate. When we were watching Game of Thrones, man, it always left you on a cliffhanger. You're like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Like, the mountain just squished his head. I can't believe... And this isn't even the season finale. Like, you know, always leaving you with just dying to know more.
I was always very dubious about Attack on Titan. I had years ago watched like half of the first episode and like, this is drivel. And didn't really understand what was going on. It looked goofy as heck. And then other friends got into it. So I caved to peer pressure and actually sat down way behind everybody else and started watching the first season and said, hey, this is... a very bizarre story, but it's got merit and drama, and it's got a lot of interesting stuff going on. I like fringy, zany kind of stuff anyway. I'm like, what's up with the giants? What's up with this medieval society? What's up with this, that, and the other thing? And I'm still wondering that now.
Sure. But screw that. We're taking credit because she and I watched it one night, and we turned it on, and we're like, oh, that's so weird. There's like half an episode. And then we watched it, or, you know, they had been watched because we were still sharing a profile.
That was the half episode.
And then we convinced you, I feel, to watch it because we were like, dude, this is fucked. This is so much. This is insane. Like, you're not going to believe what the hell this show is about.
I succumbed to peer pressure. And I'm with that friend of ours who said, where in the hell are they getting all of these horses? There must be like one whole district devoted to solely breeding horses because horses... get the shaft in this show.
They really do, man.
Horse death is just rampant in this program.
It's gotta be for every two people that die, a horse dies. At least, right? Yeah. One and a half horse dies for every two people.
Horse dies, another horse gets crippled.
Yeah.
A little out of horse meat on the menu there, I'm thinking.
It's gotta be, right? Yeah, because I've kind of okay, I have rewatched a couple episodes, if we're being honest, because I'm really desperate to get back into this. But yeah, the scene where the, again, spoilers, where the big monkey guy, whatever his name is, the Beast Titan.
Yes.
Picks up that horse and just flings it across and like hits that dude. It was so cool.
Man killed by horse, pictures at 11.
Not killed, because then he like fucked with him, you know. Yeah. Oh, such a good show. It's so insane. Yeah, not that anybody's listening, but if you haven't seen it, it's so worth it. If you're into just really bizarre, violent shit. Yeah.
Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan. And you don't mind a bit of exposition. Attack on Titan.
And horse death.
But it's anime, so they all, oh my God, they all have those scenes where it's like 5 minutes of the main character standing there struggling on, you know, he's got this split second decision. And he's like 5 minutes on this dialogue about his childhood and all the decisions he's ever made in his life.
All the animators are out back having a smoke break.
Exactly. So they're like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there was an animator strike or something. And they were like, okay, we just got to have it land on this picture for as long as we can get away with.
Just a lot of skinny, overworked Japanese fellas out back of the studio just smoking like stumps on fire.
Down. Remember, I just remember you talking about, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, I'll edit it out if you don't want me to, but when you worked at Cynthia's, that Japanese dude that would come around because he was part owner of the company, just a medical device company, just smoking a cigarette with somebody following behind,
sweeping up his ashes and stuff. Yep, just fogging him down without a care in the world. Bad like whiskey, too.
Yep. It's just like, yeah, he'd be like half drunk. Like, he would sometimes...
I wished I could get on my best days as drunk as this guy was.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know why I thought about that, dude.
So what's our main topic today?
So the main topic today is the Texas City Explosion, a.k.a. Texas. I'm going to do that again. Our main topic today, covering Texas. And since Laura's not here, unfortunately, no murder. So it'll just be a tragic event that was definitely preventable. So yeah, this is the Texas City Explosion. I'd never heard of it. Of course, I'm sure people in Texas know all about it. It happened right near Galveston. Basically Galveston, but technically Texas City. Yeah, had never heard of it. My dad, I felt because his dad grew up in Texas and that he had never mentioned it, I guess, or heard about it. Yeah, here we go. On April 16th, 1947, one of the largest non-nuclear explosions took place at Texas City Port, killing 581 people, injuring thousands, and causing millions of dollars worth of damage to public and private property. Around the time of World War I, people were learning that if you put ammonium nitrate into the TNT, the boom gets bigger and at a cheaper cost. So we should give credit to some evil German scientists, and they do actually exist, and they're not just characters in Marvel movies and the Indiana Jones franchise. So Fritz Haber was the man that discovered nitrogen could be chemically... Oh, I'm sorry. Let me re-say that. Fritz Haber was the man that discovered nitrogen could be fixed chemically as ammonium nitrate, but it couldn't be produced on the large scale. And then his buddy Carl Bosch, possibly also an evil German scientist, but I couldn't totally tell because I was crunched for time, figured out how to produce it on a large scale, which did help feed lots of people around the world with its fertilizer. Yeah, and its introduction into agriculture. But both did... also win the Nobel Prize individually. All I know about an artist formerly known as Fritz, that Fritz Haber was, of course, the literal, like, the quintessential evil German scientist that introduced gas into warfare, yeah, I believe.
His process first made chlorine really cheap and prevalent, and that was one of the first war gases used in World War I as poison. And then later on, of course, upped his game with phosgene and arsenical smoke and all kinds of deviltry coming out of the very, very expert German chemical industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say all that, but I just wanted you to have an opportunity to. So.
Thanks, sweetie.
You're welcome. All right. And on that fateful morning, workers were finishing up loading sacks of ammonium nitrate fertilizer onto the Grand Camp, a French cargo vessel. They were loading it into the lower part of Hold 4, which I'm sure means something. Over 2,000 tons had already been delivered onto the boat. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, on board. And as the men waited, around 8 a.m., someone noticed smoke was coming from the cargo hold 7 or 8 layers down. They tried to extinguish it with 2 fire extinguishers and a small amount of water they had on them, but soon the smoke was too much and the workers had to evacuate. As people were trying to figure out what to do, the captain rolled in and in very broken English stated that he did not want the fire hose down because it would ruin their cargo. He was just real concerned about that cargo. And instead, he had the hatch closed and battened and covered with tarpaulins?
Tarpaulins, yeah.
Tarpaulins. He had the vents closed, and then he turned the steam system on. So while they were trying to execute their ship plan, men in the hold next to the hold 4 were trying to remove the ammunition that were adjacent to the burning chemicals. Soon the heat and smoke were too much, and everyone had to evacuate the ship. So because of the unique color of the smoke, fire was drawing in a lot of onlookers. The smoke was orange and gold, and many remarked at how beautiful it was, looked against the sky. Luckily, the workers were able to get a hold of the fire department despite a recent telephone worker strike, and soon 26 men and 4 fire trucks arrived on the scene from Galveston. So by 8:30, the pressure from the steam had blown the hatch cover off, and thick orange flames were shooting out in a column. In addition to the 26 men was another oil firefighting team that I guess some of the businesses just like had on hand. They were ready to go at any time. So they also came to help, but one team did manage to spray one hose onto the ship, which was reported of being so hot that the water vaporized before it even made contact, so it didn't do shit. As more time is passing, the crowd is growing, especially with curious school-aged kids, and around 9:15 a.m., everyone was fucking dead, John. No, they weren't all dead, but a lot of people were dead. It was really devastating. The ammonium nitrate was done fucking around, and it just exploded in a bomb that was thought to be even more forceful than what the United States dropped on Hiroshima. A mushroom cloud went 2,000 feet into the sky and could be heard 150 miles away. It was even registered as an earthquake in Denver. And something I forgot to put in here, but it also blew. There were 2 planes flying around, and it blew 2 planes out of the fucking sky. It, like, filled them all full of shrapnel, which is a terrible way to go. The blast killed nearly everyone on board, though some websites said a few people on the boat survived. But I don't know how. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened, right?
Oh, yeah.
You think it was possible? Or they did? There were some survivors.
Certainly heard. Yeah, there were a couple of survivors from the ship. Some men had cast. They had evacuated the ship. They cast men away on boats. The boats still weren't terribly far away from the main ship. But some of the guys in those small rowboats actually survived and were dragged out of the harbor
later. Wow. Oh, my God. Okay. So a Monsanto plant across the slip was annihilated, not to mention the other businesses nearby. Pieces of ship flew miles away from the point of eruption. The ship's anchor landed over a mile and a half away in a 10-foot crater. So pieces of fiery boat rained down from the sky for miles. The shrapnel bombarded and ripped through buildings and nearby people. One woman who was near the docks, it didn't say how far away she was, which is kind of a bummer.
Far enough.
Exactly. She was 17 at the time, and she said when the first blast hit, she threw her coat over her and cried out for God to save her. And she said when she got up, everybody around her was dead. So others described the debris falling from the sky onto their homes. They were getting pinned under rubble. They were getting cuts and lacerations, broken bones, everything. One man described being a young boy in school during the explosion. So he was in the schoolyard and he was knocked off his feet. And then I guess he said he got up like, whoa, what was that? And then another explosion happened and he was like knocked off his feet again. So 25 blocks away is where his school was and he still got knocked off his feet. So the debris that was on fire went through several oil storages, not to mention fully equipped buildings with working plumbing. So, you know, when the burning hunks of metal tore through, they also had oil fires to deal with. The Grand Camp had also been carrying a lot of cotton and balls of Sisal, which fell from the sky, which, you know, made it worse for everybody on the ground. There was a 15-foot tidal wave that was created. So on top of being blown away, or if you didn't get hit with shrapnel, now you've got hunks of metal and water and shit from the docks, and everything's a fucking nightmare. So yeah, the smoke could be seen for 20 miles. People driving on the highway could see the smoke, and a lot of folks just kind of went towards it, knowing that obviously something terrible had happened and the town probably needed assistance. Those in the town that weren't injured, of course, you know, ran right to the blast zone, and to help in any way that they could, but yeah, just everything was insane. So in the course of the shocking events that unfolded, everyone forgot about the other ships that were affected by the explosion. So the High Flyer was also a cargo ship that was loaded with an ammonium nitrate fertilizer, and it had been next to the Grand Camp. So when the explosion hit, the High Flyer was pushed into the slip across from where it was docked and lodged against another vessel. It wasn't until two men that were on body recovery detail later, when they noticed that yet another ship was on fire and that flames were coming up the hold. So they reported it, but it took several hours before someone finally gave enough of a shit to go look at it. Finally, around 11 p.m., efforts were made to try to pull the boat from the docks. Even though the anchor chain was cut, they could not remove the large boat with tugboats, and by 1 a.m. flames were shooting out of the hold again. So luckily there was almost no one around. They had evacuated most of the town. I don't know why there were still people left, but maybe, I don't know, just some people who couldn't, I don't know, maybe weren't mobile. At 1 a.m. on April 17th, the High Flyer exploded in a blast that, for those who witnessed it, claimed it was even bigger than the first one. The explosion, of course, added to the already devastated port. They described the blast as having multicolored hunks of metal shooting into the sky, and it just landed all around the town, starting more fires. So good times were had in Texas City, Texas. The second big boom claimed somewhere between 35 and 100 lives. Some warehouse and machinery equipment was blown away too. A drill press was found about 2 miles away. Concrete buildings were reduced to rubble. Almost everything on the dock was reduced to a mass of tangled steel and burned debris. The two explosions damaged at least 1,000 homes, decimated the town's fire department, and wrecked a lot of businesses. Even though the power and the water were cut off, hundreds of volunteers still came to help. Around 4,000 in all came to set up temporary hospitals, morgues, and shelter. A lot of Monsanto paperwork was destroyed, which I'm sure just eats Monsanto up inside, like the cancer they give people. Less than 400 people were identified, and the rest were missing, which is where the loose number of 581 comes from. Though some had slightly different numbers. So Texas City was within a 7,000-mile radius at the berth. Aside from Monsanto, there were 3 oil companies, 11 warehouses, 9 piers, 1 grain elevator, and the rest was residential. And there is some old footage you can find on this, like, Texas Archive website. And, it just has, like, a little old reel of them kind of breaking down what happened during the Texas City explosion. And, yeah, they actually show the grain elevator. It was still up, but they said it was, like, cracked all the way through, and it just was condemned, like no one was going to ever be able to use it again. So it is possible that the fire started from a cigarette. According to the Treasury Department's investigation, they learned that if shoremen were told they couldn't smoke while they were loading cargo, they would threaten to walk off the job. So it sounds like they were kind of dicks about it. It was also determined that by sealing the hatch, it raised the temperature, which I guess makes ammonium nitrate erode faster, right?
Yeah, it chemically disintegrates into ammonia.
Yeah.
And ammonia, raw ammonia, not the kind you have under the sink for cleaning stuff, which is mixed with water. Raw ammonia gas is incredibly corrosive and very, very flammable.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, the steam just made it that much more unstable, I guess. And then it takes a... From what experts said, it takes a lot to go wrong for an explosion of this magnitude and for it to happen on an accident. You know, they were kind of comparing it, because there were a lot of stories about the Texas City explosion that were also talking about what happened in Beirut, because it was, I guess, sort of similar circumstances.
Back in 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, and I can't believe it. That feels like a lifetime ago, that story, and it was just a year ago.
August 4th, 2020.
Good God. And in 1962, the Supreme Court ruled that the owner of the Grand Camp couldn't be held responsible More than 3,000 lawsuits were settled over the explosion by 1965, when a special act by Congress settled all the claims for $16.5 million. And today the fertilizer industry is worth more than $18 million. I think there were a couple little things I kind of forgot. But, you know, just the cost of when everything went wrong, you know. Let's see. Okay, so property losses to the industry, businesses, and residents was around $50 million in 1947 money. So that's a lot of fuck up.
That's a big chunk of $1 billion today.
That's insane. Yeah. Oh, and then real quick, just to go over some of my sources, I got some from the conversation.com, article by Barbara Demonikes, firehistory.weebly.com. I got some stuff from Modern Farmer. Like I said, that texasarchive.com had footage, and it's under the moving image. I got another article from dco.uscg.mil, and it's just under records of proceedings. So I think those were pretty much all the sources. Oh yeah, and then just like history.com. They had kind of a meh. Oh, and then the Texas City disaster, there's a National Hazardous Materials website that I got a lot of information from. So yeah, that's what happened in Texas City, Texas, all those years ago. Did you read anything up on the Beirut one?
Yeah, I'd been following it, because I too am also, interested in big booms.
Well, you were in artillery, so yeah, it's like in your blood.
And I also was present in a large ammunition dump explosion in 1991.
Oh, I've mentioned that, the Doha Dash, yeah.
So, Beirut was, multiple point failure, as we say in the quality industry. A lot of things have to go wrong for an explosion of that magnitude, and a lot of things did go wrong.
Yeah.
Everything from improper storage to improper firefighting to just basic neglect by all authorities involved in Beirut. Lebanon's a mess, and it has been for years, and it's not any better now that they have a 150-foot-wide crater where their harbor used to be.
Did you see any photos of like what it looks like today, if there's been much improvement or not really?
The port buildings and stuff are thrashed. They've towed away the wrecked ships in Beirut. But they're still very visible from aerial and satellite photographs. Enormous hole in the harbor, and the grain silos next to which the ammonium nitrate, 2,300 tons, I believe, was stored, are still standing, but they look rather worse for wear and are probably going to have to be torn down.
Yeah.
The explosion didn't do it, but it did them in.
Yeah.
And that was the food supply.
Yeah, like that grain thing, yeah.
The grain silos were the primary food supply for the entire nation of Lebanon and large portions of Syria, and obviously all the grain inside of them was either destroyed or condemned.
Yikes. Really, there's no, well, yeah.
It was a couple years worth of food for these people, which now has to come from somewhere else.
Oh my God. And with COVID and limited shipping, how are they doing over there?
Not great. Substantially worse than they were before. That's saying something. Lebanon is a failed state among failed states.
Yeah.
And it was already on the downtick when this happened. And this just kind of, I think the only reason it hasn't exploded in open warfare, other than a couple of minor incidents, which you might have been following in the news, is the fact that everybody's still on more or less COVID lockdown.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of stress happening over there in Lebanon. Yikes.
But I do believe the Texas City disaster was actually a somewhat larger explosion than what happened in Beirut.
Yeah, what did we read? Was it the Beirut or the Texas one where it was like, this is the sixth largest?
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah, exactly. Largest explosion. Which means there's five more out there that are more powerful.
Texas City was six and Beirut was three.
Oh my God.
That means there's been two larger ones. Oh, well,
there was the Canada one?
The one in Halifax in 1917.
Yeah. Where that was that the one where it was like 200 people were blinded from the blast?
Well, from glass.
Oh, glass. I thought it was just from the blast. Like, no,
they were watching it. They were watching it from windows and did not take cover when they saw the explosion. You have, in a lot of cases, several seconds to take cover because light moves faster than sound. the blast wave moves at around or slightly faster than the speed of sound. So my army training is like, you see a flash, you get down, you take cover.
This is also a PSA. Yeah. You ever see a blast? Get down. Don't let the glass stab you in the eyes.
Get away from windows, you know, whatever you can do. But these people, 200 people were blinded by flying glass in the Halifax explosion in 1917.
Holy shit. Well, snap. Okay. Well, that was Texas City explosion. I don't know, any other fun insights about ammonium nitrate fertilizer or, you know, I mean, I know it's fairly stable. I guess, oh, one other thing I read too was like, I guess there's still accidents in transportation that people, or there's something like, there's been at least 20 incidents of explosions or something being mishandled with ammonium nitrate to like deadly, yeah. You know,
yeah, it's such numbers. It's such a prevalent chemical. I mean, millions of tons of this chemical are produced yearly for two great purposes. One is, of course, fertilizer. Mm-hmm. The method by which Haber and Frisch developed easy production of ammonium nitrate has probably fed 2 billion people across the world. So it's used extensively as a fertilizer, and it's also 80% of the explosives used in mining and other concerns here in the United States and I think worldwide is a mixture of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil called ANFO.
Yeah.
So there's millions of tons of this stuff being produced every year. And, you know, if it's not handled properly, like anything else, can lead to disasters.
Yeah.
Because of the huge quantities in which it is shipped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading that and just, you know, of course, all the new regulations that had to come in and handling and just the fact that they didn't know the basics about what they were transporting, you know, to know it's so, if something goes wrong, it can be devastating. And of course, something did go wrong and it was devastating. But just the fact that I know this is 1947, but still it does shock me when there's not protocol when it comes to a sort of volatile substance, I guess.
Well, the firefighting that they used in 1947 and a couple other accidents, this is actually repeated a few months later with another explosion outside the port of Brest in France, is the old steamships, of course, would use live seal a compartment that had flaming things in it and pressurize it with live steam, and that'll knock out 99% of fires.
But okay.
If you expose ammonium nitrate to live high temperature steam in a sealed compartment, it's like almost the worst thing you can do.
It was literally the exact opposite of what he should have done.
The fact that it happened a couple of months later in Brest, France, in an almost identical set of circumstances.
That's kind of crazy that it was a French vessel and that it still, you know, that still didn't make it back specifically to France.
Luckily, this particular vessel was out away from the harbor, out on the roads.
Okay.
So it only killed about 85 people.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
And severely damaged the seaport with the artificial tsunami wave and flying hunks of wreckage and things like that. But just a few months after Texas City.
Yeah. Man, that is devastating. Well, John, it's time for Ratman.
Oh, El Cazador de los Ratos?
That is correct. And then followed by the bizarre statue saw? Yeah. Okay.
So I lived in West Texas for a while. Not the town of West Texas, but in the geographical region. I lived in West Texas for a while as a teenager and again as an older adult in the Army when I went to intelligence school. I had two lives for the price of one.
Har.
The first one I was renting out, staying in a semi-abandoned trailer outside of Alpine, Texas, just for, you know, shelter from the elements. There's no plumbing, there's no water, no electricity. I'm basically camping out indoors and glad to have a roof.
Yeah.
But this trailer was on another person's property, and it was infested with rats. There wasn't a moment, if you held still for more than 15 seconds, a rat would run across your body.
It's horrifying.
I didn't get bitten, for which I'm very glad, because I always do the crazy spider dance anytime a rat got near me. Like, get off me, get off me, get off me, you know.
Anyone.
Yeah.
No, anyone would do that.
I was sleeping, was difficult, and I finally went to the property owner and said, hey, is there anything that can be done? I'm broke. The property owner's broke. I can't afford to go to Walmart to get like rat traps or rat poison or anything like that. The owner didn't want rat poison around anyway because he had small children. Yeah. And dogs. And he didn't want anything eating the rat poison. So he says, I know somebody who knows someone who can take care of the rats.
Okay.
But
great.
It's going to be $5. I'm like, oh man, you know, I dig around, I scrounge between me and him. We come up with literally $5 $1 bills. And he goes, okay, the guy's going to come tomorrow. And I'm thinking, okay, some kind of janky exterminator with some crazy poison, some arsenic or something. I'm not going to be able to live in this trailer anymore. But I just wanted to see what's going to happen. Yeah. So the next day, this 1950s Ford pickup truck, which is composed mostly of rust and hope, putts up the dirt road to the property. And it's being driven by a teenage boy, and out of the passenger side climbs out the oldest mobile human being that I had seen up until that point in my 17 years of life on this planet.
Yeah.
He looked like something that came out of an ancient Egyptian exhibit on mummies.
I was going to say, was it like in The Mummy, when the mummy is slowly, you know, building its flesh back
out? This guy's
you know,
not half done.
Got it. Yep. Okay.
He comes out and he has got this ancient revolver, 22 caliber, shoots 22 caliber long cartridges revolver. I recognize it instantly and I'm like, what's going to happen with that?
What do you think the gun weighed as much as he did?
You know, he leaned to one side as he carried this in his right hand. He definitely took shufflings. It's like he knew where he was going and what the whole deal was. No words were exchanged. He took the $5 and he walks into the trailer. I got all my stuff out of it because I thought Poison Man was coming. But nope, we got El Cazador, the hunter. El Cazador de los Ratos, the rat hunter. He walks into the trailer, and since, you know, there's no curtains or anything on the windows, what few of them had glass, I could watch this guy moving around, and he'd shuffle around and look down at the floor. He'd shuffle around, look down at the floor, and then bang! And I'm like, what? He just shot through the floor.
Yeah.
And then he'd shuffle around, it's like he was listening, his eyes were closed. Bang! And he'd shuffle around, bang! This happened 6 times because that's how many rounds this thing held. And he walks out, gets back in the truck. The kid goes underneath the trailer. Mm-hmm. Half of the weather skirting's gone, so you just see underneath there. And he brings out 6 dead rats.
Holy shit, man.
All of whom had been shot in the head through the floor. And now I knew where all of the tiny holes in the floor of this trailer had come from because this cat had been there before.
That's right, man.
So that was the rat hunter.
That is so rad. That is the coolest. I wish I need to see this on an episode of Reservation Dogs. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I need to see string cheese of a man just come out, you know, leaning to a side with this big ass fucking pistol that's half his body size, you know.
Just one of the strangest things that I had seen up until that point or later. Just the man's eyes never opened.
God bless him. Was there a dog in the back that said, seeing eye, bitch?
You know, it couldn't have been any weirder, even if there had been.
Or a big, giant rat in a seeing eye, bitch.
A vicious seeing eye, bitch, yes. From Everything Is Illuminated. Great movie, correct. If you get a chance to watch it. But the other thing I witnessed in Texas was several years later, as an adult, as someone in training in intelligence school in San Angelo, Texas, at Goodfellow Air Force Base. Made some friends among the local Texas populace. A couple of them were airmen who just happened to be serving there. And we're just driving, I believe it was State Road 67. This is probably between Fort Stockton and San Angelo. And it is the middle of nowhere. It is flat. Nothing grows there. It is just dirt. It is West Texas. It's where they keep all of the extra empty space.
Yep.
And just this lane and a half of blacktop, stretching off to the southwest, And I see something on the horizon, not directly along the road, but kind of in the direction the road's going. I don't know exactly where it was. Didn't have a GPS with me or anything like that. But it's this, first it's like, well, it's some kind of a statue. It's some kind of an edifice. And
you could tell from that far, like it wasn't a building. It was a statue.
It was a statue because it was definitely man-shaped.
Okay, yeah.
And it's sitting about a mile or so off the road. As you get closer and closer, it is... I figure about 50 feet tall, and it is a statue of a Roman legionary in full armor. He's got his semi-cylindrical shield in front of him. He's got his gladius in his hand, pointed down, not up, and painted on his shield. And his shield is like the size of the roof of a house.
Yeah.
Says, put on the whole armor of God.
Holy shit.
From the book of Romans in the New Testament.
Woof.
It had the exact Romans number dot number, you know, after it.
And West Texas have a big Mormon population?
Well, it's not Mormon. This is, you know, this is from the Bible.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. I thought you. I don't know.
Not from the Book of Mormon. This is from the New Testament.
Oh, my Book
goodness. Of Romans.
Yeah.
I forget the exact chapter. Number semicolon or number colon number. And there is nothing. There is nothing else. There are no homes, no houses, no rain shacks, no power lines. There's absolutely not even a road leading up to this thing. It looked like it just fell from heaven or it was just manifested there.
Do you want to know why? Because you're not a believer, John. You weren't a believer. It's like Eric the Viking. You're like that Christian dude that like can't see Valhalla. You're just wandering around like, I don't see shit. What door are you guys talking about?
I saw this thing.
You saw the thing, but you didn't see the magnificent, glorious city behind it,
somebody
full of its many devout believers.
Somebody went to a great amount of effort to bring thing there, to have thing made and constructed and transported and erected. And keeping the wind from blowing this thing away. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was made out of. It could have been stone. It could have been stone.
This
I don't
know. My call to the Satanic Temple to go build a Baphomet right next to that thing. Somewhere in West Texas. Equality.
Somewhere along State Road 67 between San Angelo and Fort Stockton.
Now I want to look up giant statue in West Texas and see if I can find anything.
This was 1990, so...
Maybe it's been blown up.
Hard to say when it showed up and if it's even still there, but it was one of the damnedest strange things I've ever seen in my life.
Let me see. There's some giant statues. No. What do you say? A centurion?
Roman legionary.
What the fuck?
He wasn't a centurion. He didn't have the side-to-side crests on his helm. He's just a legionary.
There's a huge pair of legs in Amarillo, Texas, but it's just legs. There's nothing
Amarillo's
else.
Amarillo's way far to the north.
Yeah. Giant,
like everything in Texas
statue
is way
of
far
Sam
away.
Houston. Oh yeah, because these legs have socks on them. Boy, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, this cat was wearing sandals, but
it wasn't. Was it on a? It's not on a horse or
nope,
anything.
Just no, standing
just
there,
a dude. West Texas giant statue. Are you sure you didn't take acid and you were just sitting in your rat trailer?
Well, several years later.
So you think,
The rat trailer was in 86. This would have been in 90. So
okay. Giant statue.
The rat trailer was about 200 miles away.
Huh.
I mean, distances are so vast across Texas, and back in the day, there were no open container laws. As long as you weren't visibly drunk, the cops couldn't arrest you. So distances across Texas are rated in six packs.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There ain't nothing for you to hit.
So it's 2 6 packs from San Angelo to Fort Stockton. This is per occupant of the vehicle. So it's quite the drive.
Is this it? No. That's not it. John, this thing doesn't exist. What if this is like Brigadoon, where you were there at the right place? It shows up once a year or something. It just manifested. Are you sure you weren't dreaming?
Drinking, but not dreaming.
Oh, see, I didn't know you were drunk when you...
I didn't say drunk. I said drinking.
Uh-huh. All right. And then I had mentioned also you telling... Because you had... described these epic, beautiful pair of pointed
They were ostrich.
Ostrich. Shit. Sorry. I knew I'd... You know, I sort of got it right. No, not at all.
These were a beautiful pair of handmade ostrich boots. In my size, as it worked out, because I won them in a poker game.
Right
and
on.
They just happened to fit, and so that I kept them.
Yeah.
They were very, very nice, but I also lost them.
Like you misplaced them, or you like bet them?
Accounts vary, but I used to like to go down across the border and play poker in Nuevo Laredo. And I always went dressed, carried money. I never had any problems with anybody. My Spanish is good enough, you know, border Spanglish stuff. A lot of times, if you just point at something and speak loudly enough, someone will tell you how much it costs. So I can count. Anyway, I remember going on a Friday, and the memory tape kind of fuzzes out during a poker game.
Okay.
Because there was mezcal involved. There was always mezcal involved. And
they plan it that way, man.
Yep.
And they waited for your ass to show up.
I came to, I won't say woke up, but yeah. I came to.
Okay.
I'm on a bed face down in a room, and I look around, and it's just a room. It's not a great room. It's not a hotel room. It's a room in somebody's house. But definitely I'm on the other side of the border.
Yep.
And
oh, wow. Okay.
Someone is screwing with my feet, which is what woke me up. I am dressed in a pair of sharkskin trousers.
Hell yeah, playa.
And nothing else. I am bare ass naked except for these sharkskin trousers, and there is a small child playing with my toes. I have no shoes. I have no socks. Like, when I say sharkskin trousers, I mean, I don't have drawers.
Yeah.
I have a t-shirt. I have anything but these sharkskin trousers. There's a wallet in them. It's my wallet, and it's got $400 in it.
Oh, hell yeah. What did you start the evening with in your wallet?
About 100.
Nice. Well.
Apparently lost my shirt.
But you got $400 and a sweet pair of
sharkskin trousers that actually fit, but the boots were gone.
Damn, man. Do you miss those boots to this day?
I do. And it was also a very interesting bus ride back across the border because I had ID.
Yep.
I just have clothes.
Yep. Sorry, I'm just trying to picture you in these sharkskin trousers, and I just keep picturing, like, Edward from Twilight. I feel like you must have looked like a beautiful vampire.
Not quite as cut and defined, and I don't sparkle, but...
You don't... Well, hey, you do to me, baby. You're my sparkle.
Depends on what you're on.
That's right. When I take shrooms, you're my sparkle, baby.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
But it was an interesting journey back across the border. The customs guys didn't really give me, you know, much of a look because apparently they'd seen even weirder.
Yeah.
But the gate guards at San Angelo did have to haul out the Polaroid camera and, yep, you know, take a picture of me to be put up on the wall of shame. But I had ID.
Do you think they keep those wall of shame pictures? You think there's some big box that's somewhere almost, in the army next to like the Ark of the Covenant of shame pictures?
Every military gate guard, whether it's Navy, Air Force, Army, has the wall of shame at the gate kiosk. And okay, I'm sure there's a box because I've featured on several walls of shame.
Yeah, of course.
I've been on the wall of shame at Fort Sill, and I've been at the wall of shame in Fulda, Germany, and I've been on the wall of shame at San Angelo, at Goodfellow Air Force Base. I don't think I made the wall of shame anyplace else. But
oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, there can be later broadcast. There could be more wall of shame stories.
That's true, and it's never too late to make a new wall of shame, John.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, but
it's true. This is what shame looks like. Is our living room. This is what giving up looks like. It's not that bad.
You're
well, we
harsh.
Have a sofa. No offense. Look, the sofa is fucked up because we have a large... He started off at 90 pounds and now he's over 100. Well, not like he's huge, but like 101 pounds or something. But he has torn up this sofa and we've made the decision he's a bigger dog. He won't have as long a life. And that sounds cruel, but we're like... literally waiting for the dog to die so that we can get a new sofa because, you know, he's just going to fuck up anything new we get.
And this is not the first sofa he's destroyed.
This is not the first sofa he's destroyed. The pillows, you know, look, he's, bless him, but he is such a fucking moron.
Like, he's dumber than a rucksack full of hammers.
He, in his prime, just one of the most beautiful dogs I have ever seen. Dumber than a bucket of, I don't know, wet hair. It's, he's so dumb, but he's so sweet, and he's a bit of a pussy. And I feel bad saying this because he doesn't move a lot now. You know, he's much slower. We used to have to keep him separate from the cats. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we used to have to keep him separate from the cats. We don't anymore. We just started this year for the first time because he seems to have gone down enough in energy where they can, you know, be in the same room together without him fucking with them too much.
Eating them.
He has killed two cats.
That we know of.
One was feral. The other one, our cat, it was still kind of a kitten. This is a really crushing story. I'm probably going to cut this out because we're going to get animal control called on us. He got out. We didn't realize it. We're looking for him. We can't find him. Mary finds him dead in the backyard and screams. It's horribly traumatic for all of us, mostly our child. That will haunt her forever. But he wasn't like the cat was torn to shreds. He just really shook him. And I think that was it. I think he broke his little kitty neck.
It's not squeaking anymore. I'm going to drop it and go on about my business.
I always refer to him as a Lenny. You know, he plays with his little mouse, his little toy, until he breaks its fucking neck, you know, with his big dumb hands. So that's Mooch.
That's Mooch.
But anyway, he doesn't move around as much as he used to. And I'd say, and again, this is so horrible to say, at least once a day, I will look at him and I will wonder if he's still alive. I'll be like, oh my God, he's dead. And then he'll take a big breath. And I'll be like, oh shit, you know.
Or he'll fart. Well, you could do that after he's dead too. But
I've been saying this for a year, John. I have been thinking this dog will be dead any day now. And
I keep waiting for the call at work.
Right.
Mooch has passed on. We need to. I keep fearing that he will die downstairs.
Me too.
Because then there's going to be us two lugging 120 pounds of dead dog up the stairs.
Like, I'm just picturing how horrible it would be, like, bundled up in a blanket, like, thump, 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 thump. I just, oh my God.
And then who do you call? We can't throw him in the garbage. We can't throw him in the garbage can.
And it would be really weird taking out a big, stiff dog, shoving him into our fucking car. Could you imagine putting a stiffened Mooch into the Yaris? We'd have to put, like, what if we just strapped him to the roof? Just this, like, stiff-legged dog.
Friggin' National Lampoon's Vacation. Yeah, just tie him to the roof.
Right, we'll just... We'll glue his paws to a skateboard. We'll roll him down the street.
We really sound like the worst pet owners
we
in
are.
The world.
Well, okay, we love our animals. Listen, I'll say this for Mooch. When we realized he wasn't working out, we did try to get him a new home. We tried extensively to rehome him. Every offer was super shady. No one just wanted to pay the rehoming fee. They wanted to do trades. And we were like, no. So that unfortunately meant it being very inconvenient for the cats, for the dog, all of us. But, you know, we made a commitment that we were going to take care of this dog.
He's always had a home. He's always had groceries. Exactly. It's been like running a prison and with two populations that could never mix.
And he really got walked regularly until, you know, the business sort of took over our lives and my ankle got really fucked up. But like, you know, he was being played with. He was getting walks. Unfortunately, the last few years have been a little rough on him. But, you know, we never gave up on him. We never ditched him. We never just took him to the pound because we couldn't be bothered.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a horrible person, but I'm not going to do that to an animal. I'm not just going to drop him off in the countryside and go find a farm, buddy.
Right?
I'm just
like, people will do that to, like, tigers, you know, like, oh no, my illegal tiger is getting too big for me to handle. Go be in the wild is somewhere in, you know, fucking Ohio. Like,
it's literally
sure
happening, kids.
It.
It's literally happening.
Like, where do we, isn't there a huge problem in Florida with the, like, fucking anacondas or boa constrictors or something like that?
Turned loose them when they were inconveniently 3 feet long
much.
And now they're monstrous. They're eating alligators.
And like, oh my God, like, I've heard 911 calls of like, Oh, it's devastating when, because people will keep them as pets. And then, of course, oops, it got out. And then it strangled the 2-year-old in the night, you know, just devastating stories.
If you ever find yourself being
wondering,
encircled by a constrictor, there's 3 things you can do.
Oh, that's right.
To break the snake's hold on you. The first thing is either pour alcohol on its head. You know, whatever you got laying around the shop.
Yeah, Russians fear not. They'll always have vodka on them. But the rest of us,
Anaconda,
you know.
Anaconda danger in Russia is low because it's extremely cold in that country for 9 months out of the year.
No, they have the dreaded Arctic boa constrictor.
The snow snake?
The snow snake. That's right. It has a sheath of fur. It's like that dragon from The NeverEnding Story.
So you can pour alcohol on its head. You can pour hot water on its head, or you can find its tail. You're thinking snake is all tail. They actually do have a very tapering section at the end of their body, just south of the asshole. And you can bend up on that. And any of these 3 things will cause the snake to relinquish its coils and attempt to slither away. Watch out. It might try to bite your ass, but at least it's not squeezing the life out of you or your loved ones anymore.
So this is important. If you're being strangled by a boa constrictor, anaconda,
any kind of boa.
If you are able to fix yourself a cocktail, you can defend yourself. If you are able to put the kettle on, you can save yourself.
Important safety tips.
Important safety. Have that shit ready to go at a moment's notice, because you don't know.
Save you or someone you love.
That's why you should always, I've always said it, keep a flask on you. Always, no matter what. School, church, funerals, always have one on me. You never know when anacondas will strike in Colorado.
I keep one in my desk drawer at work.
Don't say that. I'll edit that out so you don't get fired.
Nobody knows where I work.
Oh, that's true. I've told everyone. No, I haven't told anyone.
They can come check my desk if they dare in the cage.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why I work in a cage, so.
No, I have never, I've never been drunk at work. Ooh, there was a guy, though, and I know we should probably wrap this up soon, but there was a guy, so at Neater's, there was that drunk dude. I thought he was such a good dude. He ended up, you know, liking to smack his girlfriends around every once in a while, which made him not so great. But I remember one time, because he was actually an alcoholic. I think he had a DUI. You know, he had a bad drinking problem. But he was so nice at work. You really, again, just that classic, I never suspected because he was so nice. But we think, because occasionally we would find these, like, little one-shooter, like the little plastic bottles in the girls' bathroom. We'd be like, where the fuck did this come from? We think it was him. We think he was throwing it away in our bathroom.
Right.
So that he wouldn't get caught. We're like, staring at all the girls, like,
who's
was that
drinking?
Bitch? Was it that bitch? Was it the night crew? Who did this? You know? So we think it was him. But he did have the best story I've ever heard. Again, terrible person. I hate him. He had the funniest story.
Don't they all, though?
Don't they all? Because they're so shitty and they don't mind being shitty to other people, you know? And then it turns into kind of like a funny story. Anyway, well, not for the person that it happened to, but he was taking his driver's test, and this is, I think it might have been Baltimore. So he's taking his driver's test in Baltimore, and he says, a dude, he's driving along, it's going fine. A dude cuts him off, and he said, he cussed. He was like, oh God, you know, God damn it, or something like that. And the guy, you know, giving him his test was like, okay, we need to turn around. It's like, what are you talking about? He's like, we need to turn around. You failed your test. He's like, are you serious? What did I do? And he's like, you showed signs of aggression by, you know, cussing at that guy when he cut you off. And he was like, okay. So he goes, burp, and he just pulls over. And he's like, get the fuck out of my car. He's like, you got to take me back. He's like, get the fuck out of my car. And he kicked that dude out. He had to he was like miles away from the place too. And I was like, that, I mean, it's cold and he was such a dick, but goddamn if that is not a funny story. Like, actually, get the fuck out of my car.
Used to get in arguments with my mom driving. And
yeah.
If it was in my car, I'd just pull the car over and just leave the keys in it, walk away. But aren't you going to take me home? No, no, you're a much better driver than I am. Why don't you get your, obviously safer if you get yourself home. I'll get a cab.
Yep. Oh shit. Well, I don't think I've talked much about your mom, but, you know, she was an interesting woman.
She could be pretty entertaining, yep.
Yeah.
In the military sense of the term entertaining.
That's really putting it mildly, man. I mean, you're really sugarcoating that hard.
Well, I mean, that's like, say, the ammo dump explosion was a very entertaining Tuesday.
Yeah.
So my mom was an entertaining woman.
Kind of gal. Oh, shit. Well, I think we should wrap this up. We got a dog to bring in. It's a little chilly outside. He's fine. He's got that, you know,
fat,
thick layer of walrus blubber on him. But, oh, man. Yeah, boy, is that going to burn when he's cremated.
Oh, man.
You know, the way you heard, like, you know, sometimes when morbidly obese people get cremated,
An explosion in Southern Colorado today destroyed a crematorium.
Right.
A pet crematorium.
I did apply for a job to be a pet mortician. I didn't get it. Such a bummer. Anyway, on that note, goodbye, young ones.
Remember, ice cream has no bones.